The holidays aren't a happy time for everybody. For some, it's just a reminder of how lonely they feel. One day of sad feelings isn't so bad. But modern research shows chronic loneliness can be as detrimental for your health as smoking. Kirsten Gerst Emerson is an assistant professor at UGA's Institute of Gerontology. She says more needs to be done to address loneliness as a public health hazard. Kirsten was my guest on the show a few months back. I also spoke with Augustine Fuentes, who teaches anthropology at the University of Notre Dame, about how to constructively think about loneliness. I began by asking Augustine if a scientific definition of loneliness exists.
Well, that's a really good question. We do sort of. Senses of detachment, being unattached, being set off, and we have a bunch of hormonal and physiological cues that we can measure, showing that the body reacts to this perception or this sense of being alone.
And Kirsten, what does that look like in real pragmatic terms? What are you looking for when you're trying to determine if someone is suffering from loneliness?
It's a really hard thing as a researcher to see. I can't look at someone and see from the outside. I can't measure their temperature and see if they're lonely. So we usually just ask people, but oftentimes people don't want to admit to being lonely, or they don't even think about themselves particularly as lonely. So we'll ask questions of people kind of to get at the issue of loneliness.
So then what does that mean? I mean, when we see these reports that say loneliness can be as bad as smoking and obesity, Augustine, what does that mean? What is it that loneliness is doing to our bodies?
When people perceive themselves as being alone, being cut off, you can have all sorts of stressors within the body, different kind of hormone fluctuations, digestive issues. Even your neurobiology, the way in which you think and your brain sort of interprets signals, can all be affected by this sensation of being cut off. So, yeah, it can be quite damaging.
Is it, Kirsten, is it different or similar to the warnings we get about, say, stress or anxiety?
Yeah, it plays kind of a similar role, but we don't talk about it very much. So we hear about it on the news all the time to manage your stress or to get exercise. But loneliness can have almost the same impact in the same way. You know, it can decrease your immune system. You're not as likely to practice healthy behaviors. Things like that can really start to affect your body.
So you are work with older people. You're in the Institute of Gerontology. And I assume this is a problem for many older people. What exactly does it do for a senior person when they are feeling loneliness?
So for older adults, it's an issue because they have more risk factors. So they're not necessarily more likely to be lonely, but they have more of these risk factors that can lead to loneliness. Like they might not be able to drive anymore, and so they might feel cut off from the world. They may not they might have some activity limitations, some disabilities. So they might not be able to get out as much as they'd like to. Or maybe their friends or family members have passed away. So widowhood is a big predictor of loneliness as well.
And then, Augustine, does it matter? I mean, Kirsten is talking about someone who's not able to get up and drive to the grocery store or drive to a book club meeting. Does the quality of an interaction matter? For example, if I'm feeling lonely and I decide to go down to Starbucks and I'm just hanging out with people I'm not talking to, does that still help me feel less lonely?
It can help. It can also make things worse. We're really social beings. All primates are, but humans especially. We need social face-to-face interactions on a regular basis. It's deep in our evolutionary history. So getting up and going to a Starbucks to hang out or to a library or what have you can provide a little bit of that, but it could also make you feel even more isolated. And I think this pointing out of being unable to travel, to get into a car, to move, can be really important because our modern-day cities don't have spaces where people can easily walk to on average and be in the company of others. And that's a problem.
So then, Kirsten, I mean, one of the things that many people have pointed to help relieve loneliness among older people, especially if they're homebound, is social media and online games, online chat forums, being able to connect people with people online. Does that actually help if we're talking about quality of interaction here?
I think Augustine is right. It can help for some people. Some people find that they can get connections through chat rooms. But for many people, it can actually make them feel even more lonely. You know, if you look at all these people on Facebook having so much fun over the weekend, posting pictures of themselves in groups, and you're not doing that, that can actually make you feel worse. So for most people, I say that, you know, online doesn't replace that human interaction that we really crave.
So, Augustine, you're talking about the effects of social interaction on primates. How do I diagnose that? If I'm if I say, you know, I feel really lonely, at what point do I think this becomes a problem I have to deal with? What kind of symptoms am I looking for?
Well, I mean, there are a number of different kinds of symptoms that we could tell looking at family members or friends. There's a shutting down of affect. There's a reduction.
Wait, shutting
in
down
the,
of affect. What does that mean?
Yeah, right. It's when you start when you stop or pull back from expressing emotions, being extremely happy or even extremely angry, when you start to shut down a little bit of the expression of emotions. That's one of the indicators. What really is fascinating, a recent study at University of California, Davis, showed that monkeys that are expressing loneliness exhibit some of these same things that humans do, that when we're feeling cut off, that catalyzes, sort of causes us to be more cut off, and we perceive ourselves as increasingly distant from others. And so this can be spatial, we can isolate ourselves, or sometimes it's just in this affect thing, people start to shut down.
Okay, so Kirsten, let me get your ideas on unrecognizing symptoms. How do I determine whether I'm just feeling lonely and it's a passing phase, or if it's something I have to actually be concerned about?
It's a good question, because, and I think you mentioned this at the very beginning of the program, is there's a difference between just being lonely for a day or even for a weekend or for a month. But it's the people who are lonely for chronic periods of time. So in our research, we look at people that were lonely for 4 years, which is a long time to have that sense of loneliness. You know, you can have a weekend where lots of family and friends are over and then they leave and you feel alone and it feels lonely. But that's not the same as chronically day after day feeling like you don't have anyone to talk to or anyone to reach out to. So it's more of a chronic sense of loneliness.
That's a really, really good point, because occasional feelings of loneliness can actually be good, because when you have a strong bonding experience and then that is over, right, so your family leaves or what have you, you should feel a little bad. You should feel a little sad. But that's normal swing of emotions and events. It's when it gets extended.
But we can feel, Augustine, we can be tricked by our own emotions, right? If you've just had a breakup, you may be feeling loneliness because you had an intense bond with someone. You had somebody to go to movies with and out to dinner with all the time, but you're still having important interactions with friends. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, but that's good. You want to have ups and downs in life. If everything is flat, there's a problem. Being lonely, feeling the pangs of loneliness on sporadic events or occasions is not bad. It's long duration or feeling really isolated over time that can be really damaging.
Okay, if I'm feeling lonely and it's gone on for a period of time, what do I do? If going to Starbucks might make me feel worse, what do I then do? Augustine?
Well, there are a lot of things you can do. Hopefully you have friends and you have family and you can reach out to them. When this feeling of loneliness extends for a long period of time, you want to take advantage of your social networks. The real danger is falling into this hole where you have fewer and fewer actual strong friendships or social contacts.
And that's where Kirsten comes in, because that's the situation for a lot of people who are older, right?
Yes.
And that's complicated, I imagine, Kirsten, by the fact that people don't want to admit that they're lonely, as you mentioned earlier. So how do you get people to seek help?
Exactly. So it can be kind of a self-perpetuating cycle. If you don't want to admit to being lonely, you're not going to go out and maybe seek any social interaction. But then the less you seek, the less people are going to contact you to go out if you're not, you know, going out with them. And so you can become kind of stuck in this cycle. And one of our research has actually shown that older adults are seeing their doctors more often, their primary care physicians. And they're almost using that as a social outlet, which is, again, part of that public health cost, because if they're seeing their doctor every time for non-physical ailments, then that can cost our system quite a bit of money if they're using them as their social interaction.
I remember an older relative of mine and saying that she was really lonely and she needed us to visit more often, which we did, I should say. But when we said, you know, you have your nurse, and she said, that's not... it's not the same thing. She makes me feel worse. Is sometimes interaction with a medical person not help with loneliness? I mean, does any human interaction help?
Any human interaction will be better than nothing for some people. But yes, sometimes the medical establishment can make you feel worse, and you can start to think you have some other medical issues that you might not have ever thought about before. But if you talk to older adults, they often have a relationship with their primary care physicians, so they'll know them for years and years at a time. And we found that they're not more likely to see emergency room or specialists. They're more likely to see their primary care physicians, the ones that they've known for maybe 10, 20 years even. And so they feel like they have a relationship. But that's certainly not the kind of interaction we want to promote. We want to promote friendship and someone you can call at night or have dinner with on weekends, and someone who can promote healthy behaviors by going out for a walk with them or going to a movie.
So, Augustine, we have seen public health media campaigns that have circled around raising people's awareness of all kinds of mental health issues. Do we need that for loneliness? If the effects of it truly are as bad as, say, smoking or obesity, should we at this point be encouraging people to seek help?
Well, we should be encouraging people to have friends and to have social lives and to get out more if they can. That's one of the big problems that we forget what normal behavior is. Normal behavior is interacting, doing things. I mean, you can look at a recent meta-analysis that shows lonely people are more likely to use Facebook. We don't know if Facebook causes loneliness, but it's pretty clear that people are turning to every option they can, in many cases, to try to expand their social networks. We need to make people aware of how important this is, but also offer opportunities. You know, when it's winter, where I am right now, it's really, really cold outside. And if there aren't easy places where people can get together and have social events, it makes it even more difficult.
Well, and that becomes problematic, Kirsten, because the data that we do have on social media, and especially places like Facebook, they're not always positive interactions.
Exactly. And so that's where the human element really is key. Yes, it's easy to try to say, let's get everyone a computer and set them up with a Facebook account. But that's not really going to solve the problem. We really, as humans, crave interaction with other people. We want someone to go out with. And part of that, too, is trying to promote healthy behaviors. If you have a large group of friends and they go to the YMCA for water aerobic 3 times a week, you might be more willing to go with them because they're holding you accountable. But Facebook doesn't do that for you. Or if you go out to dinner with them or you cook a large meal with someone, you might be more likely to sit and enjoy a long meal rather than pouring yourself a bowl of cereal at night and calling it dinner. So social interactions are great for you, but they're also really good for some of these healthy behaviors that we're trying to encourage.
I get worried because we're talking about seniors, but the fact of the matter is that the data that we have on young people shows that they're way more likely to text somebody, for example, than actually call them or have a face-to-face interaction. If this is an issue right now, I have to imagine it might get worse. How concerned are you about the generations to come?
Kirsten's exactly right, but everything she says goes for all ages, and I'm extremely concerned at the increasing isolation, increasing focus on handheld mobile devices as the interface, the primary go-to interface for young folks. We need to continue to create spaces for social interaction in addition to or above and beyond texting or even video chatting. It's not going to be the same, and so when these individuals who are 20 are all 60 and 70, we're going to have an even larger problem if we don't head it off now.
Okay, but how do we head it off? If we make this a public health initiative, you can't force people to leave their homes and go to a book club.
But you can provide many more opportunities for concerts, for movie going, for dinner clubs, spaces and social settings in universities and workplaces. We've taken the social out of social media, right? We think that just by putting someone into connection electronically, that's sufficient. I think culturally we need to recognize getting out, taking a walk, being with friends matters in the big picture.
Kirsten, we have about a minute left. Would you agree with that? What kind of things can we do to head off what could be a public health issue?
I think he's exactly right. You know, we want to make this a national conversation. We want to talk about it. The UK just started something called the Campaign to End Loneliness, which is a national initiative. We need to start doing this at a national level and realizing that it's as important as exercise and smoking and all these other public health issues that we talk about quite a bit. Loneliness is right up there, but we're not talking about it. So the first step, I would say, is having a conversation and then having communities take action.
That was UGA Professor Kirsten Gerst Emerson and Augustine Fuentes from the University of Notre Dame. We've been talking about the pangs of loneliness.